can talk about the report she put out, which you can find on the Huff website, too, huffsantacruz.org, in case you are computer-minded or have access to one. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with. And she kind of deconstructed the report, or actually just simply went through commenting on different aspects of it. But there was, for the first time, a lot of police stats on how much money and time they actually spend on these stupid, bogus citations given to homeless people with the intention of driving them out of town, having nothing to do with real criminal behavior. Tickets for sleeping, tickets for sitting near a building, tickets for displaying jewelry on the avenue for donation or sale, tickets for political tabling, for singing, not specifically for singing, but unreasonably disturbing noise is how they like to dismiss that kind of free speech activity. So there's a lot of citations that are given out. In fact, it's often been said that if the police were as busy dealing with real crime as they are with these phony citations on Pacific Avenue, that essentially make them a police or a merchant security force that drives away people that the merchants simply don't find uncomfortable downtown. And the same thing is now happening with the residents who are being jacked up with scare stories and fear propaganda from Take Back Santa Cruz, the Clean Team, and other groups with the needle hysteria that's spread around the last few months. If the police had actually been going after real crimes, and I don't think drug war, for example, is a real crime. I don't think possession of narcotics, possession of marijuana, use of marijuana, even sales of any of these drugs are real crimes. You know, pharmacists get away with much more toxic substance sales. 7-Eleven gets away with much more toxic substance sales. Tobacco, alcohol, much more dangerous substances to most people. And we decide that's what adults have a right to make choices around. But homeless people don't get to make those choices because what most people do in private, they have to do in public. So if they want to take a piss and the city council has decided they won't open up any bathrooms at night, then they have to go take a piss in the bushes, and that's illegal. And that, of course, becomes a basis for denouncing them for despoiling the environment. And this has all been said before, so I apologize to folks who are just really tired of hearing the same rap. But unfortunately, every night and every day, the same kinds of citations are issued. And at the homelessness study session, this was the criminality of the homeless as presented by the staff. It's not the criminality of the city for refusing to provide the most elementary sanitation facilities or the most elementary campgrounds, such as Brent Adams is seeking with the Sanctuary Campground, or the most elementary even trash pickups and garbage bags so homeless people could be encouraged to clean up their own camps and not have to worry about hiding what they're doing. Extending needle exchange instead of repressing, suppressing, and destroying it, which is what the city council has done in the city completely. Other than, I guess, either underground efforts or efforts right outside the city and the county, there is no needle exchange in the city anymore. I think you may be able to there may be a roving needle exchange vehicle. I'm not quite sure about that. But the needle exchange that was at Barson Street is gone. Not replaced, no apologies, no indication there was any crime problem there of any greater nature than anywhere else, or a needle disposal problem there greater than anywhere else, but it became the basis of hysteria because of videos pushed around by the Clean Team and surfers and individuals who, some of them with the best motives, wanting to see a cleaner environment, but just moving completely in the wrong direction. We found 750 needles! Over a period of 3 or 4 months, to which, again, I always reply, yeah, and the needle exchange took in 250,000 needles over a period of a year, according to their stats. I don't, you know, they could be lying, but that claim has not been made by even the critics of the way needle exchange has been operating, that they've been lying. So, anyway, there was this homelessness study session that happened. I left before the public comment period and hope to hear the public comment period later if I can stomach it. I did get a report from Councilmember Micah Posner, who I spoke with afterward. He was very encouraged, he thought, by how positive the comments were from the poverty pimps in the audience and the people who actually, some of whom, there actually was a smattering of homeless people, 10 or 15, I think, somebody estimated out of a crowd of several hundred, well, not several hundred, over 100 people there. He was supposed to appear at the Red Church and make a speech the Monday before the Tuesday City Council meeting to encourage homeless people to come. He didn't show up. He did, however, of course, stay overnight in the homeless Paul Lee Loft shelter, which shelters 46 people, where the need is 1,500 to 2,000, and the waiting lists are 4 to 6 weeks. He stayed there and wrote about it in the Sunday Sentinel. And, you know, I mean, that's, to me, a little ambivalent about it, but I primarily think that's a publicity device. It has to do also with supporting his bureaucrat friends, friends of Don Lane, who's the head of the, who was the president of the board of directors of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as I call it, or the Homeless Services Center, as they call it. And not that there shouldn't be, you know, the minuscule services they provide, but it really makes an excellent target for people to say, hey, 20 years later and there's still homeless population is growing, what is this Homeless Lack of Service Center doing? You know, horse shit. And they're right in some respects that minor fixits are being put forward. I mean, there are some good things. It's nice to have access to showers, nice to have... when you can get in there. It's nice to have access to two meals a day. Perhaps not the highest quality food, but, you know, not the lowest either, perhaps. I haven't eaten there in quite a while. And it's, I understand, even when it rains, they allow people to sleep under the overhangs, which is what former executive director Doug Loisel used to do. And I talked to Chris today, the manager of the Paul Lee Loft. I called him up to find out if the reports I'd heard on Monday of the Homeless Lack of Services Center refusing to give documentation or receipts for the waiting lists of the Paul Lee Loft, important because the law states that if you're on the waiting list, you cannot be convicted of sleeping ban crime because that's the city ordinance. It's also, of course, the constitutional right that of necessity. You can make a necessity defense that will win, provided you have the energy, time, and resources to do it. And I had heard that we got the receipts for the first time I'd ever heard out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center when the Visible Sleepers, whom I've talked about on the show before, did a protest sleep out in front of the post office from Wednesday to Sunday a week ago. And that... they did that with these receipts in hand, and when the police came, they only got one sleeping ticket, and police admitted it might be thrown out because of the receipts or because of the fact they were on the waiting lists. And the police then started giving them other tickets, obstructing the sidewalk tickets. But nonetheless, the ground was broken for the idea that sleeping tickets, if you are presenting your receipt, may become more difficult for the police to really feel they can give out. They have to find some other excuse to harass you, indicating they're not really interested in following the law. They're interested in the general homeless removal policy, the social cleansing that is the real objective. I was afraid of the homelessness study session because that's how the staff seemed to slant the report. And again, I could only get this computer to work better. Seems to be having a problem. Let's see. Yeah, it's not... I may have been having a problem in the studio with the computer, and that... well, we're connected, and that's strange. Let's keep trying. So, the receipt situation, according to Chris, who I talked to this morning, he told me that anybody who comes in can get a receipt if they ask for one, but he says no one has asked for one in the last week, or maybe he hasn't been on the job all the time, and maybe the report that came Monday was not an accurate one from Lawrence, who gave the report. So hard to say. But he did say he would be happy to give out receipts to anybody who came there. So anybody out there listening who wants to be theoretically immunized from sleeping band citations, go down to the Homeless Lackey Services Center and their office hours on weekdays. I think it's 9 to 5 or thereabouts, maybe 9 to 4, maybe 8 to 5, I'm not sure, but, you know, go at midday to be sure. Walk in and say, I'd like to get on the waiting list. Fill out you have to fill out an application. You apply. I don't know that they've turned people down in any numbers at all, so yeah, there shouldn't be any problem there. And then ask for a documented receipt. And they say, we don't have any receipts. Say, well, just write out a slip of paper signing your name, saying I'm on the waiting list, and saying for how long. I think you have to come in every week to check to stay on the waiting list. Otherwise, you get bumped off, or at least there's some sort of process of that kind. So that's something I encourage people to do, because it will certainly make it somewhat more difficult for the police to pretend with a straight face that they're actually following the law when they're not, by giving people sleeping tickets, camping tickets, blanket ban tickets. It's illegal under this law in Santa Cruz to fall asleep on any public property or even in your own vehicle after 11 o'clock at night until 8:30 a.m. in the morning. Similarly, to cover up with a blanket or lay out bedding, as the phrasing has it, that's also illegal. So check it out. If they give you citations, it's also illegal to set up a campsite with the intention of remaining overnight, even if you have no legal place to go. But if you're on the waiting list of the Pauley Loft or the River Street Shelter, these tickets have to be dismissed. That's one thing. And also, you are not vulnerable to this law according to the second provision, either the first or the second provision, one of the two. So that should address the issue. I've asked activist Steve Plaich to look into where this is all going. Are the tickets actually being dismissed by the city attorney short of trial, which they're supposed to be if any tickets are given? Haven't heard back from him, and hopefully I'll be able to call him and see if we can get him to answer the phone, what the story is with Steve, who heads the Homeless Persons Legal Assistance Project. And you can try to contact Steve yourself if you have a problem. He, in the past, has been very accessible. 466-6078 is his number. 466-6078. So I'm going to take a break from my long tirade here, but I want to remind you that you are welcome to call the studio if you have questions, comments, if you have any reports about what's been happening in the last week outside, if you have any reports from other cities. I did get in touch with some folks up in San Francisco before the show, Sunny and Natasha, who had a video which I have passed on to Brent Adams, and hopefully he will be posting online, which, according to Natasha and Sunny, documented police violence against them. And this has become quite a hot issue with Brent Adams' lucky and timely and appropriate posting of the Vasquez-Richard Hardy encounter that happened 1 o'clock in the morning a week ago downtown, where Vasquez is documented as, some would say, spinning and dropping, some would say throwing, some would say losing control of Richard Hardy, and with the result that in a handcuff fashion he was dropped face and body first onto the sidewalk, and then, of course, taken to the hospital where he resided for a number of days, looking like quite a mess, I understand, but then ultimately was released. It's the video that was posted both on the Sentinel website, Santa Cruz Patch website, and I'm sure Brent's website, Subcomandante Films, I think that's what it is, caused quite a stir. Probably the most visible video around this issue in Santa Cruz ever. And thank you, Brent, for that good work. We need more such videos, and that's why I'm hoping that Brent will post the video that we got him of Natasha and Sunny. I'm hoping they'll call in from San Francisco, where they are apparently hanging out at one of the many Homes Not Jails-ish type occupations that are happening up there. We had Keith McHenry, co-founder of Food Not Bombs, come to town Saturday before last. He talked about the importance of forming a Homes Not Jails locally. We sort of had some rudimentary activity in that direction, but it hasn't really gelled yet. Some people are interested, and I'm hoping that they'll get together. I'm trying to be connective in that way. But the Homes Not Jails theory is there are, that, as Becky Johnson's sticker has it, empty buildings are the crime, and not the people who occupy them. Empty buildings are a form of crime when they are sort of dangled in front of the community, kept there for profiteers, set empty year after year, and people outside are freezing or suffering from other ailments because they have no shelter, and the excuse of the city is they can't afford it or they don't have the means and all that, but in fact, it's the usual story of the 1% monopolizing huge amounts of territory, income, and assets. Looks like a, or sounds like an incoming call. Let's see who's on the line. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Uncle Albert. This is David Minton Silva.
Hey, David.
Observer of this fine, fine world. I saw that video of that police officer, cop, pig, not dropping the man to the ground, Robert. That's not the description. He slammed his face into the ground. I saw it.
Uh-huh.
My God. I mean, it's like, you know, hey, people, wake up. Okay, Robert, thank you. I just had to correct you on that description. It wasn't a drop to the ground. It was a slam.
Okay, well, thank you for your perception of that one, David.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, if people want to find out, they can go to the, just look up Vasquez, Santa Cruz police homeless video. You'll find, just if you look through a browser, you'll find it. And it's, you know, you can make your own judgment. The video is pretty clear. It's got the action on it. And you can decide whether you think it was a drop, a throw, a spin, whatever you think it is. And then you can be the judge yourself. The police department was sufficiently upset about it that even without a formal complaint, they said they were going to investigate it, though I learned from Councilmember Posner that Officer Vasquez is still on the job. So he has not been removed from suspended pending that. Usually if a cop shoots somebody, they investigate, he gets removed for during the period of investigation, even if there isn't a video camera present. Now, this time, even though there was a video camera, it wasn't being shot, but it certainly looked like there was a serious argument to be made. We just heard a caller express his concern that this was, if not an intentional act of brutality against a homeless person, certainly a negligent action. And there are those who dispute that. If you look up the Sentinel, which has a whole bunch of comments on the two different stories that have come out on this so far, you'll find a lot of people saying, no, this officer is dealing with a bum downtown, a drunk. He's got a record and all this sort of thing, as though that really makes any difference as to how a police officer is treating someone in their custody who is pretty drunk and not a big threat, I don't think. But, you know, anyway, you can be the judge of that. So I think it shows the importance of such videos, and I think it shows the importance of people who post such videos. And I would encourage people to carry their video devices around, whether it's a cell phone or you have a camera, even pictures, just, you know, still photos. If you get photos of activity happening, please post it on Santa Cruz Indy Media or YouTube and write your commentary about what you've seen. It's completely legal to do that. That's the way that we will, at least in the short run, kind of woo up the horses of violence that are pretty much running free. And the violence isn't all explicit. The violence comes in the violation and restriction of people's rights downtown, where they are treated like subhuman people. They're expected to follow orders that no reasonable person should have to follow, not to rest by the sides of buildings, to show some sort of bizarre and unusual respect for individuals with thugs with guns, as I call a lot of these police officers. Not because as human beings off duty or as individuals they are thugs, but once they get into that costume, once they sign on to that system, it's a different story. And you have to call what it is by its proper name. Yesterday was also a meeting of the another group from the city council, the so-called Public Safety Committee. I think it's better, it'd be better known as the Public Paranoia Committee or the Public Hysteria Committee. It's run by three right-wing council members, David Terrazas, or is it Terrazas? I can never remember which. Pamela Comstock, the founder, co-founder of Take Back Santa Cruz. And Lynn Robinson, whose mission in life now seems to be cutting funds from the Homeless Lack of Services Center, which, don't let my criticisms of the Homeless Lack of Services Center mislead you. Yeah, they got lots of problems. Yeah, they're completely inadequate, but cutting them off with the claim that they're enabling homeless people is laughable. It's that they aren't enabling. I wish they were enabling people in a way. They are, you know, they were created by the Downtown Association and the City Council 10 or 15 years ago in order to divert people from Pacific Avenue in the downtown. And they have served that purpose, although in the intervening years they've become their own little kind of fiefdom, and they don't let people hang out there during the day, and they developed a whole series of restrictive rules, and they have the so-called low-impact or no-impact zone around them in which you're not allowed to be there either. So there's a whole... But as a series of limited services, they need to be continue. I mean, you know, at least that's what I think. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Yes, Robert, this is David. If people view that video, look where the police officer's hand is, and see if the police officer's hand is slamming that face down on the ground. You can see it continuous. Now, I want to apologize to the police officer for calling him a pig. I don't believe those terms are appropriate, but he is a thug, crooked, criminal asshole, and we ought to throw these bums out.
David, I think what you need to do is apologize to the swine who are serving our breakfast tables rather than to the human beings who are acting like brutal robots. I mean, that's my feeling. That was always why offend the people who are providing us with lots of tasty bacon, that is to say the pigs, the real pigs, by calling them police officers.
Yeah.
Or calling police officers pigs, anyway.
I just don't believe it's proper ever to call a human being a pig. Except maybe you could, tell maybe little kids or something, don't be so piggish. I don't know. But when you refer to a police officer as a pig, that's pretty bad. When the Rainbow Panthers start picking up guns, and I don't think we're quite there yet.
Well, I'm not a gunman myself, but...
I'm not either. I'm a pacifist, you know that.
But, there are
I'm
plenty
a revolutionary, make no doubt about it. I'm a revolutionary. This shit has got to come down. We're not going to make it. It's going to be a close call as it is. We all have to know that we have to disassemble these corporations and make them into human-serving organizations.
Well, thank you, David. And if you, by the way, have seen Becky around, tell her that we're hoping she'll call into the show and talk about the homelessness study session.
Talk about her what?
The homelessness study session work that she did.
Yes. Colin went too. I'll tell them both. Thank you.
All right. And I think Colin Clyde, who is an activist as well as a person who's been homeless, and he had his own thing called the Magic Show, I believe, before the Front Street store that hosted that was shut down. It's now vacant. Across from the metro. Anyway, maybe we'll get some more on the site reports. Let's see. I was mentioning the next day, yesterday's Public Safety Committee meeting. This is a committee which is one of two actual operating committees of the Santa Cruz City Council. And in Congress, committees are, where bills are formed. The public testifies and, people give, some meaningful input and yada, yada, yada. In Santa Cruz, these are really, there are two of them. One is the Public Safety Committee, and there's, I think, the Social Services Committee. It now has another name, but that's really what it is. And with the plunge of the City Council to the right, although it's never been left, really, in the sense that it's been concerned about human rights for poor people or basic economic rights for lower-income folks or even middle-income folks, these two committees are stacked with reactionary people. And on the Public Safety Committee, which is supposedly kind of an oversight committee for the police department in a way and the fire department, they're actually sort of a megaphone for these bodies, these groups, when they want to do to get new nasty laws. And so I should have caught this because I actually read it, or actually I saw the description of it online, and then improperly accused David Teresis, the chair of the Public Safety Committee, of not having it up there. And he did. It was up there, and I just missed the whole thing. There was a bill, an ordinance, that was presented by the staff. I guess Scott Collins is the staff of the Public Safety Committee. And that is an ordinance that makes it illegal to loiter, hold up a sign, hang out at the on any of the medians in Santa Cruz city limits. And the medians, of course, are those sort of grassy areas, or the areas between in the middle of roads. So it's described as follows. City Council finds that when pedestrians remain on public medians and roundabouts in the city for the purposes other than the purpose of assisting pedestrians to safely cross the street, including using the medians and roundabouts for, among other purposes, disorderly conduct, solicitation of money, solicitation of prostitution, consumption of alcoholic beverages, or other unlawful activity, they obstruct traffic and distract drivers, thereby threatening both their own safety and the safety of the community. This regulation is therefore necessary to protect the public health, safety, and welfare. Now, I can't tell you if they actually presented any cases of accidents caused by what their real target is, panhandlers on medians, although this also impacts anybody who, for example, if you want to eat breakfast at Zoccoli's on Pacific Avenue and you sit down on the grass of the median in the middle of Pacific Avenue right outside Zoccoli's, that will now be illegal to do. Even though, you know, you obviously are not necessarily soliciting for prostitution or money or consuming alcohol or engaging in any otherwise unlawful behavior or even being disorderly in your conduct, except your very presence there has now become a crime once this passes on May 14th, next Tuesday, at the Santa Cruz City Council meeting. Actually, technically, it has to go through two readings, May 14th and May 28th, and then a month later, on June 28th or thereabouts, the police can start their little ticketing out there along Pacific Avenue and any other places where homeless people or anybody else is stopping to chat, holding up a sign, lingering, or loitering. And again, definitions for the purposes of this section: remain means using the median or roundabout for a purpose other than assistance in crossing the street, including the purposes, again, of this listing of inflammatory and misleading so-called crimes, disorderly conduct, solicitation of money, solicitation of prostitution, consumption of alcoholic beverages, or other unlawful activity. Note, it doesn't say you have to be doing any of these things in particular. It says just these are some of the things that we're kind of going to flash at you to sort of justify this obvious abridgment of a traditional Santa Cruz activity, which admittedly is used by homeless people who put out signs and say, you know, we'll work for food, looking for money, hungry, why lie, I want a beer, whatever the sign says. But this attempt to give the police still more power to harass not just homeless people, but political activists. You want to stand up with a sign that says Free Bradley Manning? Forget it. It's illegal starting June 28th if this passes. You want to have a sign that says stop the drones? No way. No can do. You want to have a sign that says, I don't know, elect Annalisa Cube for city council? You can't do that either. These are, again, increasing restrictions on the public spaces in order to target the homeless, but they're impacting everybody because if they specifically say the homeless, it begins to look like what it really is, a pogrom against a particular class of people, which it's supposed to be a no-no in American society, but actually is quite traditional and has been part of our past and our present, and unfortunately looks like it's going to be part of our future for quite a while to come. I'm going to take a musical break, and I'll remind you the call-in number here is 427-3772. I don't know if I'm going to be getting that call from the San Francisco gang, of some of whom are the visible sleepers who were sleeping in front of the post office a week ago or more. Actually, it was about About a week ago, I think. Well, actually, it's a week and a half, 2 weeks ago now. But you can call in, 427-3772. Give me a call, and hey, I'll listen. You can talk, and then I'll talk back.
I won't be making a trip to visit Tom Blankenship in his prison cell, and I don't wish him well. Won't visit Tony Hayward, he's way too wayward, though seeing him in jail is my holy grail. No, it isn't fine to operate a mine when coal is the cancer of the earth, but to sacrifice 29 to increase your bottom line, brother, you're asking for it. Into the patrol car, hey, Officer Flory. I won't be making the trip to visit Tom Blankenship in his prison cell, and I don't wish him well. Won't visit Tony Hayward, he's way too wayward. Don't see him in jail, here's my holy grail. And the only proper plea for drilling in the sea with no referee is insanity. But on second thought, I guess we really ought to press charges, including reckless endangerment in the presence of clear and present danger. He went straight to manslaughter, sea slaughter, shore slaughter, killing of the land and air and water. So, everybody, I won't be making a trip to visit Tom Blankenship in his prison cell, and I don't wish him well. Won't visit Tony Hayward, he's way too wayward. Gonna see him in jail, it's the holy grail. Gonna see him in jail, it's the holy grail. Gonna see him in jail.
Everything works out in the end, even at General Motors. You know, I wasn't so concerned when I first heard GM was having difficulties. I mean, it's a bunch of jobs. But then it turned out they were going to cease construction of the Hummer. No. You attack the Hummer, you attack the right of every American to drive a tank. Take away my Hummer, you may reduce me eventually to driving a car. No. It's very important that they look into alternative energies. I don't know why they didn't before. You know, the writing was on the wall when they had to sell their corporate jets. GM sold them. I think they sold them to Ford. But Ford sold theirs, too. Well, it's an important thing that happened at GM, because what they did, and it was very unfortunate, they actually gave a seat on the board to the United Auto Workers. Now, I think people should do what they're qualified for. In the case of unions, perhaps making concessions, something like this. The chief executive is really, his job is chiefly to execute the workers. The workers don't have a job. It's a sad situation that goes back many, 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 many weeks. I think they should do a wind-powered car, powered by the wind from the car in front of it. It's a kind of breath air in, sort of Ponzi car thing.
How much is that giant ship in the window? The one with the balancing scale. How much is that giant ship in the window? I do hope that giant ship's for sale. I believe our corporations were created as a prequel to the leadership of those too big to fail. And when we have alighted in the Congress and been knighted, not that we were invited, and our love is not requited, to make up for that we call ourselves Citizens United. They say dollars and democracy don't mix, one swallows the other. Guess which I'm accused of gaming the system? That's just blaming the victimizer. 'Cause money is speech, oh yes, lots of it. A vote is fine, but money is above it. Buying elections, you gotta love it. Money works every time, and it's no crime. Not now.
Don't donate to a candidate that beat to grass. The Chamber of Commerce will redeploy your cash. Make creative use of intermediaries. Launder your cash to keep elections clean. A rising tide lifts all boats. Some a little higher so they stay afloat. Every politician has his or her price. Who's to decide if that is or isn't nice? I'm an innovator, I'm on the cutting edge. If things need improving, I just buy a new legislature. A rose by any nomenclature is still a rose, it's just the rose I impose. Don't be shy with the corporate cash. Democracy's a billion-dollar bash. Though they say corporate government is fast, isn't that can't happen here. Maybe in Germany or Italy, but never here at home, where the people all have health care and the buffalo still roam. Yeah, the sky's the limit. My guy's gonna win it. Power, he'll be at his hub. To prepare for his election, he's putting in his hours at the country club. If you miss me at the voting booth, you can't find me there. Come on over to that agency, I'll be buying it there. Oh, brother, I'll be buying it there. I'll be buying it there. Come on over to the TV studio, I'll be buying it there. All you fools are my tools, I've seen to that, through substandard schools, and media that I won't mention, and I didn't. You didn't hear it, you were never here. You know, democracy is not so much about what you do, it's about what you choose on your pay-per-view. Remember, corporations are people too. A major donor is a system owner. And when we have alighted in the Congress and been knighted, not that we were invited, and our love is not requited, to make up for that we call ourselves Citizens United.
Yeah, that was two more by David Lippman, or Dave Lippman, in Wild Bill Bailout. He's got a few comments about these. The Ballad of BP and Massey Energy, that was the first one you heard. Oh, it's not a ballad, it's more of a drinking song about jail for CEOs, is his comment. And the second song, the one you just heard, Citizens United, corporations now have all the rights of people, they can buy elections at the going rate. Citizens United was the name of the decision. The Supreme Court decided that one could spend unlimited funds on political campaigns for because corporations had to have the First Amendment rights of people. Woo-woo. So now everybody's running around doing some major panhandling, but not on the medians. They just they do it in a fancier, more sophisticated way that's far more corrupt and far more damaging than any homeless person on a median could ever be. But as I said, that is the ordinance that apparently passed the City Council Committee on Public Safety, so-called, last night. And now I asked the staff if they would get back to me to let me know when the audio tape of that particular meeting would be in the library and available for me to play selections from, so I could see who is supporting it, what the debate or discussion was, whether there was actually any statistics that showed there actually was a public safety problem with people holding up signs on the median or stopping to chat there or sitting down to wait for breakfast in front of Zoccoli's there, you know, whatever. And old Scott just did not get back to me yet, although I did contact him in the morning and he was supposedly in the offices, according to the other City Council staff members. I also sent him an email because I hoped that he would get back to me. And I may not have yet seen a response. I'll take a look at that because I got a backup of emails now. And I'll check that one out. The phone number here, by the way, in case you have some thoughts on any of these things that are happening. And David Silva, you are welcome to call in, of course, and your calls are always welcome. But I'm hoping that we'll get many calls from many different people. My hope springs eternal. Let's see what springs out of this call. Yo, you're on Free Radio with Uncle Robert here.
Hey, what's up? This is Colin, and I was at the City Council special study session this Wednesday.
Oh, you mean last Tuesday?
Yeah, that's correct.
I mean, the reason I make that clarification. The reason I make that clarification is because yesterday, Wednesday, they did have another meeting of the public, you know, a paranoia committee, which now is forwarding to City Council this anti-homeless, don't stand, sit, hold up a sign, or linger on the medians anywhere in Santa Cruz.
What? Okay, now there's this thing called the First Amendment. Apparently, that's beyond me.
You haven't heard, have you, called the First Amendment?
I know. It's a joke. It's from the 1700s.
You are so 20th century, hombre. You got to get with the 21st century, man.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway,
I was at this thing on Tuesday, and, you know, the really epic, dramatic moment of that, I mean, the lead up was like numbers. Homeless people are numbers. We didn't interview any homeless people, but we have all these numbers. And then Casey got up there and spoke, and he's currently homeless because of a medical condition, which, as he put it, was that he bleeds out of his ass. And they didn't cut the microphone on him. He said the word ass, and they just let him get away with it. It was amazing. And then he says, hey, you know, you guys send rangers out to steal my bedroll in the middle of winter, like, how would you like it if I came into your room and took your bed? And, you know, they don't have to immediately respond to that because it's like the public comment period, and it's just one person goes after another, unless Robert Norris is talking, in which case Pamela Comstock gets to speak out of turn in the middle of the public comment and make snide remarks. So there's a, you know, change in procedure there. But, you know, there's not an immediate response to this. And I really want to know, like, what goes on in the minds of these people when they hear people say this? Like, I'm, you know, living out on the streets because I'm disabled by this, like, horrible medical condition. And then you're going around stealing my blankets. Like, you people right there, you're the people who are directly responsible for this. And they just get these glazed over look on their face like they're watching Saturday morning cartoons or something. It's just, what the hell is going on
in
their mind?
You know what's going on.
That's what I want to know.
You know, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, there's, I noticed, I gave out flyers at that meeting. I didn't stay to talk, and I only heard very small bits of the staff report because I'd read it. And I'd read Becky's commentary on it, which I recommend everybody look at. Just go online to Santa Cruz Indie Media and look up my announcement about that particular item on the calendar, and you'll find her commentary. But I noticed most people took my flyers, and I got a kind of a neutral or a positive response. There were some people who shied away or growled at me, and they were the people who were critical, you know, the Take Back Santa Cruz sympathizers, or, you know.
The claws came out.
Yeah, a little bit, you know, but I mean, that's all right. That's the nature of public, you know, interactions at these meetings. And, and it's good that people are honest. But I noticed that, you know, people, the flyer I put out was actually, I didn't even write it. It was written by, I think, RAP, Western Regional Advocacy Project, the group that's concerned with the destruction of civil rights all along in the West, on the West Coast, in Oregon, Washington.
Why would people want to be concerned with that?
Well,
don't they know the big issue is terrorism? Come on.
Well, I'm concerned about terrorism against the poor. That's my concern, you know.
Right.
And I know.
By agents of the state. Oh, you know, it's still terrorism to the state terrorism. But anyway, do continue.
You know, I put it out, and I passed it on. Actually, Keith McHenry brought those to town, and he made a lot of them. And so I thought, why waste them? And people seemed interested. They read them. I even gave them to the city council. I didn't talk to Pamela about her reaction to any of that. But, you know, I heard that there was very little discussion of any criminalization issue. You mentioned, I guess, a couple of people brought it up. Did it come up? Did you stay for the council discussion, Colin, afterward?
I cut out after the public comment thing.
What was the division of comment in terms of what was most of the comment about, or was there any way of so categorizing?
Well, the largest faction of people were, I would say, people from social services, followed by people who have lived on the streets themselves or had, like, direct experiences, like people in their families or something who've lived on the streets, followed by, about three or four different people who are kind of from the Take Back Santa Cruz type faction. This woman is like, I go to town and I hear profanity. And I was like, why are you telling the city council this? Do you want them to legislate against profanity? Is that your bright idea?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's welcome to the real world, okay?
But you didn't hear any of the comments of the city council afterward, what they discussed then.
I didn't stick around for that. I actually just got the DVD from the library, so I'm going to check it out later tonight and probably edit together a few little best of reels and throw those up on the Magic Box Radio Show YouTube channel.
And how can people get a hold of that? Give us that more slowly, how you can check
the Magic Box Radio Show. Magic Box Radio Show. Those four words is the name of my YouTube channel. And you can find that also by searching for Magic Box Santa Cruz. It'll come right up. There's, if you just search for Magic Box, there's lots of other people on YouTube who've used those two words in the title of their video. But if you search for Magic Box Santa Cruz, man, it's like a mainline right to my stuff.
I'm having a little trouble with the web here in the studio, so I don't know. Usually the city council agenda is up by Thursday night. So I suspect, though, based on what the Sentinel said, which is, of course, risky. You can't always trust the Sentinel.
A fine journalistic establishment. What are you talking about, Robert?
That's true. They're my favorites. But they did state that on May 14th, this... no lingering, loitering, sign-holding, sitting, lying.
No blowing your nose.
On the medians will be, hit the city council as a first reading. So I'm assuming that's the case. And I'm also hoping that the commentary on that, as I said, at the Public Safety Committee, the meeting that happened the next day at the city council, which I unfortunately didn't get to. Had I been aware, I should have been, that this was on the agenda, I would have taken some pains to go. This was the same day, I believe, that the rally for immigrant justice was happening at the town clock yesterday. And, that would have been good to bring some people from there to come in and suggest, because immigrant people, also are subjected to these anti-homeless laws and policies. And it's...
Take Back Santa Cruz rhetoric that I see from people like on the internet and that kind of thing tends to be in close proximity with kind of your stereotypical Republican type anti-immigrant teabagger rhetoric.
Well,
if you hate one group, then it's that much easier to hate everybody else.
Well, I I've been watching the shitty council for two decades, two and a half, maybe even three, and they're mostly completely Democratic Party gang with a few Greens occasionally thrown in, and they are just as bad. In fact, they're worse than the others because they are hypocrites in the most, most clear way. I mean, you have the Mike Rotkins when he was in power. Now you have Don Lane.
Right. Sure.
They claim that they are supportive of homeless people by supporting these. They're a little bit more, but not much more than token homeless services. And the services don't deal with the most important issue, which is the right either to sleep legally, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewheres, a few somewheres where people can go without being, having their property stolen, being arrested for sleeping, getting stay-away orders, as Walter Lilly is facing. He's going to court tomorrow at 10 o'clock in the morning. He is on $10,000 bail for violating the probation that he took under apparently the misconception that all his charges have been cleared. He's been in jail already for 20 days. And his crime is sleeping downtown. And he is facing that tomorrow at 10 o'clock in the morning. Walter Lilly, for anybody who wants to check him out, I think it's Department 1 or Department 2. If anybody wants to, I'm going to probably go down there and see what's going on with him. But, this new law that's coming up on May 14th gives the police yet another tool, as they like to say, to move people along, intimidate people, assert their authority, and then ultimately to ticket or harass them if they decide they want to target them, which I think is All
so hang on, they're saying that they're going to make it illegal to, like, hold a sign downtown, like, at all?
They will make it illegal to make any use of the medians in the center of roads and the roundabouts, whatever they're called, such as the areas along Ocean Avenue between the two lanes going in different directions or along...
That's ridiculous. Why'd they put it there if you can't use it?
It's simply for pedestrian use, my boy. We're trying to make sure things are done in an orderly fashion. There have been so many accidents caused by this dangerous situation. Of course, that's one of my questions and why I asked Scott Collins, the staff member, through email and through voicemail to give me a copy of the audio so that we could hear what Chief Vogel or whoever he sent down there claims are the statistics of any real accidents or problems. You know, and I don't know maybe they gave those problems. Maybe there's a huge problem. I would have thought that would have been blasted all over the Sentinel sometime in the last couple of years if that had happened. So I don't think it
happened. Yeah, you would think that would be the sort of thing that they would jump all over.
Right. I mean, so it's you know, I don't think it has. I think this is the same thing that was used around the parking lots and garages law, what I call the parking lot paranoia law, which makes it illegal, as you know, to sit in your car and read a book. To change diapers of a baby in a book, to hang out and next to a couple of friends in a parking lot downtown. That's a public parking lot that your taxpayer dollars pay for. Even if your car is sitting right next to you in the parking lot, your only right is to walk through the parking lot or to park or retrieve your vehicle within a 15-minute period. That's the law in, I guess it's 10 square blocks of downtown area. If you add up all the parking garage, it's probably more than 10 square blocks, might be 20, I don't know. But all the city parking lots now have that law, thanks to Ryan Coonerty and the city council.
Yeah, well, that guy's an anal tenant control freak, so there you go.
I guess so.
I mean, yeah, it's ridiculous. It's wasting taxpayer money on all that deliberating that they do, like the cash register is clicking. You know, and on non-issues, on creating fictional problems and then making up solutions for the fictional problems that weren't really problems in the first place. And, you know, whenever I go to the council and see them deliberating on stuff like this, I'm just like, okay, like, put some businesses in the Rittenhouse building to hire people so there will be less unemployed people in town. Like, how difficult is it for you people to do that math equation? But no, they'd rather deliberate about, like, let's have a bike trail through the Poganip so it'll be easier for the neighborhood groups to get up there stuff. And, you know, just ridiculous things like, oh, let's make it illegal to have dogs. Well, let's make it legal to have dogs again. Well, let's argue. You know, I mean, can we deal with the real bread and butter issues that are afflicting this town?
Well, I don't think rent control is an issue that we're going to get into at this time, Colin, after all. It's been tried in 1982, and it didn't work, so we won't even get back there, okay?
Oh, gee, well, if it didn't work in 1982, we should just until the end of time, huh?
Well, that's what Mike Rotkin always says when you bring it up. He of course, is a former mayor and council member who's no longer in power, but his...
he's also a protege of Che Guevara, I heard. A real red.
I know, yeah. Not as far as I know, but who knows? Maybe in his younger days he had a poster on the wall. It's always possible.
Well, hey, man. Lots of people had posters on the walls. And like.
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, so Colin, thank you. Anything you want to add before I move on?
You know, that was actually a real doozy of a meeting, and I would recommend people watch it on community television this week or on their website at CTV or get a hold of it at the library because it's actually, you know, even Tina Shul's report I thought was informative, you know, a bit detached from the reality of the situation, but informative nonetheless. A lot of the people who, you know, came from the social services to speak were very interesting. It seems like they're Beehive has been kicked over by the Take Back Santa Cruz crowd a little bit. I think because they started to see the writing on the wall was that, like, if you continue to let Take Back Santa Cruz, like, yell and scream and just get their way because they yell and scream more, and everybody else, then y'all are going to be out of a job because they have an austerity agenda. So it seems like with the events that have been going on at the high school and then some of the people that showed up on Tuesday, they're starting to get a little more active in the town scene. I think that's a positive development. A lot of them had really good things to say. Monica Martinez is kind of ridiculous, but I'm not even going to get into that. Thanks for having me on, Robert.
Oh, no problem, Colin. Thanks for coming and thanks for giving us the report.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
And Colin was at the city council meeting on Tuesday, the special study session of the city council. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3, freakradio.org. Hey, all you critics of what we're talking about here, don't be afraid to call in. You will have your chance to speak, too. I will control my temper and keep my hands off the blab off switch. So do give a call, 427-3772, 427-3772, if you want to get on the line here and speak your piece. You don't just have to go to KSCO, where everybody sort of talks the same language. You can come here and confront some real critics, 427-3772. Santa Cruz isn't the only place that is moving in an anti-homeless direction. Or an anti-First Amendment direction. There's a new law that will ban protesters from riding mass transit in California. Risking arrest isn't the only obstacle, according to this article, for Northern California protesters. Under a new rule about to go into effect, political demonstrators could lose their right to ride public transportation. Starting next week, law enforcement officers policing the Bay Area Rapid Transit BART system in San Francisco, Sacramento, Oakland, and other cities can issue bus and subway bans for unruly passengers. And according to one local news report, that power could be used to prevent political protesters from getting to demonstrations or essentially going anywhere. Only conformists can ride public transportation. That was a longer story about that in the San Francisco Chronicle, and I'll have to I'll bring that one up as soon as I can get back online here. Having a little problem doing that, but let's see if I can. Yeah, might be able to. My computer seems to be a little cranky today, perhaps taking after its owner. And we'll see. I am hoping to get the audio for the Public Safety Committee, as I mentioned several times, so I can see or hear exactly what the real, if there was any substance other than let's give the police another tool to get rid of these bums, derelicts, and annoying people holding up signs that indicate they're poor, they're hungry, and they're in trouble, and we aren't helping much. You heard Colin say he's gotten the video, which is usually the city council staff puts a video in the library of the city council meetings. Not usually necessarily the special sessions. I'm not sure if they get videoed or not. I don't know if they get broadcast. I think this one may have gotten broadcast because it's been such a hot topic. Homelessness, of course, is not the hot topic. The hot topic is how can we pretend to be compassionate and eliminate all these people from the public spaces? How can we stop the Take Back Santa Cruzers from criticizing us and at the same time preserve jobs for our social service poverty pimps? How can we keep our federal funding coming so we making at least present the illusion that we're trying to end homelessness, while at the same time not actually giving homeless people any basic rights that might assist them in surviving while this charade goes on. In any case, the videos of past city council meetings, as I pointed out to Scott Collins in an email today, are not up for the last 2 months. Only one of the three meetings of the regular city council session have been put up online, even though they have the video. They're just sitting on their asses in there. Now, in the past, when I call them up and say, oh, Becky is the staff person at the city council offices, where the hell is the video? And I don't quite put it that way because she's a very sweet person, and I don't blame her for this, but somebody there is dragging their feet or ignoring the issues. And, you know, she actually works pretty fast to put up the video once a complaint is made. But the same procedure seems to be happening, the same foot dragging, the same we don't give a shit about the community's right to see these videos of the city council meetings after they're, some people can't go to the meetings. Some people don't have community TV to be able to watch the meetings. Some people don't have the time or interest or money to go in and buy a DVD. And I wasn't aware. I don't think you can check it out of the library. I'm surprised if Colin can actually do that. I think they're in the reference section. They were when I was there. So the only really good option for people to have really broadly sharing opportunities to see a city council meeting is to have it online. And indeed, finally, after some years where other city councils like Berkeley and Arcata and Eugene, I'm not sure about Arcata, but I think Eugene had its for a number of years, they were posted immediately or pretty soon after the meetings were held. They were available on video online, so you could review them. Santa Cruz didn't do that until very recently. I think just last year they started doing that, and they're doing it in a very foot dragging kind of way. I mean, apparently they don't mind all kinds of money for recruitment bonuses for the cops. You know, and hiring more security guards to march around the library and monitor people's bathroom behavior, whether they're falling asleep in the library or you know, whether they're sitting around early before the library opens outside. People have been told they can't do that, even though they can, by these security thugs from First Alarm. But they don't want to spend money on providing public records in a timely manner so that people can actually understand what's going on. And, of course, that's quite understandable because the city council and the city staff don't operate by actually consulting public opinion. They operate by pleasing certain special interest groups and ignoring public opinion, unless they are forced to do otherwise by court action or truly mass protest. And they tried to do the same thing with Take Back Santa Cruz, but they failed because Take Back Santa Cruz is a very well-organized group. They've been spreading fear and hysteria around needles for the last 6 months, and fear around homeless people and encampments and poo and pee and poo and pee and feces and all this kind of stuff. But, of course, no suggestion that there should be public bathrooms, which might have some correlation with that, you know, you'd think. But then the city council starts paying attention when it becomes obvious, like Pamela Comstock gets on the city council, co-funder of Take Back Santa Cruz, co-founder, could be co-funder too, for all I know. And then they have to start worrying about losing their seats, and some people have to start worrying about losing their jobs, and also losing face, because when so many people speak so loudly, then the council actually starts paying attention, and he actually engages in real discussion. That happened after a Take Back Santa Cruz, I think they called themselves another name. I don't know, Family Neighbors for a Friendly Fascism. I'm not sure what their name was. But they walked from the Harvey West to the city council. And the city council shut down its evening session. This was about a month, month and a half ago. And spent their time schmoozing with Take Back Santa Cruz in the courtyard on an individual basis. I went there. Brent Adams went there. I think Colin may have been there, too, the last caller. And I held up signs and got into debates with Take Back Santa Cruz people and the neighbors' supporters. Not hostile debates. Generally, you know, difference of opinion debates. And that's good. I mean, you know, it's really hard, however, to deal with the constantly repeated mythology. Oh, they don't do a one-to-one needle exchange, and that shows there are going to be more needles around, when in fact, one-to-one results in, if you have a strict one-to-one, it produces more needle waste and improper disposal, because people are discouraged from even coming to these needle exchanges. They'll go to pharmacies and buy them, they'll share them, they'll discard them, you know, with less concern or in the panic of a police action. We have a caller. Wow. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert Norris. This is Becky Johnson.
Becky Johnson, the noted analyst of the homelessness study session.
I am the author of Your Guide to the City Council Homelessness Study Session Agenda, as penned by Tina Toll.
However, you only micromanaged and micro-examined one of the six documents. Can you account for this failure, Becky Johnson?
I just am... there was... This, there was apparently 72 hours between when those documents became available and that we knew that those were the documents that the council was looking at and when the meeting was taken. So it would be difficult for a person to study all of those documents in that short time frame.
But you did, however, go through one of the longest documents, the staff report, and you made some interesting points at the Huff meeting yesterday. Why don't you, I'll just let you roll freely until such time, of course, as I need to shut you down. Go ahead.
Yes, keep that mute button handy there, Robert.
Go ahead, Becky.
All right, well, people could look at the report in its entirety, of course, online at the City Council website for that date, which was April 30th. Let me kind of go through this. We're not doing very well in Santa Cruz regarding both the number of homeless people that we have and of that, the number that are unsheltered. That's according to the statistics that were compiled by Tina Scholl, and she was looking at HUD reports and some of the same documents that we look at as well, as like, say, the homeless census reports, the homeless surveys that are done every 2 years, and different definitions of homelessness and their different programs. So, you know, we are somewhat talking the same language here. And if you look, according to HUD, two-thirds of homeless people across the nation are sheltered, with one-third unsheltered. But in Santa Cruz, it's the other way around. Now, my statistics for the city of Santa Cruz are actually lower than what they claim. They claim that they have 25 to 26% sheltered, but we have only found 6 to 10% of our homeless population are sheltered throughout the year because of, I think, the difference is that we're looking at emergency shelter that a person walking in the street could qualify for, where these other groups are looking at programs that maybe only a pregnant woman could qualify for that program, or maybe only a single person with an income could qualify for that program. There are other people who are sheltered, but that shelter doesn't really count for everybody.
And yet, let me interrupt you, Becky, that still does represent a portion of the homeless population. There are some people who have income, some people who are coming out of jail or prison. There are some people who are in those categories, and I would think if you're going to put out stats as a Huff's statster, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
you would want to also be, you wouldn't just simply say programs that are open to everyone regardless of their qualification, because if they take care of some of the people, that presumably leaves a smaller pool of people to fight over the remaining scraps, right?
It's just different ways of counting, and one way is not bad versus the other. They're just different issues to be considered. It's according to five states have almost half of the nation's homeless population. And of those five states, California has the largest. We have 20.7% of the homeless in the country in the state of California, according to HUD statistics.
Would that give some power to the Take Back Santa Cruz and actually take back our town group of 20 years ago, which had a similar run them homeless out of town undertext their claim that, see, California has all these homeless people because they're enabling the homeless. They give these wonderful benefits. The meals are so, you know, yummy, and the, you know, they just, they're Cadillac services here.
That, I didn't find that throughout the report. If anything, they were trying to say that there are more homeless here because it's a warmer climate. And that was the only thing that was alleged. I'm not sure how true that is either, because every major city in the United States has a significant homeless population, and many of those are northern cities. So I'm just, you know, relating what was in the report here that the council members were considering, and says California has the second highest rate of unsheltered people at 64.9%. But again, if that's the state average, that across the state of California, the average in any community is sheltering 64.9% of the homeless. We're way behind in that. We have way less shelter than the statewide average.
To which
Santa Clara has the seventh largest number of homeless.
Well, to which Take Back Santa Cruz might say, and I'm throwing this in, Becky, because I'd like to get your reaction, too, to the possible, you know, because this is really what this report is about. It's an attempt to either appease or oppose to some extent in support of bureaucrats, defend the services in the face of the attacks by both Take Back Santa Cruz and you know, the criticism of the council members Robinson and Comstock. So it wouldn't Take Back Santa Cruz. I mean, a critic might say to you, well, yeah, I mean, we have a much larger percentage. That's because we enable so many people. And you can't say it's just because we have a nicer climate. There's a nicer climate up and down the coast of California. And Santa Cruz has a high percentage. What's going on here? Becky enables the homeless.
Well, here, I'm just saying, in their report, 77% were unsheltered in their own studies, and 23% were sheltered. On the statewide average, is 64% are sheltered. So we 77 unsheltered. We're way behind.
Right, but that may be because we have so many homeless people. How can we possibly shelter them? Because they come here in droves. They've heard what a wonderful paradise it is in Santa Cruz for homeless people. You can sleep in the streets. You can tear up your tickets. You can take a crap with them and you know, use them for TP. You know, the cops will pat you on the back and wake you gently in the morning. That's over and so on. You see my point, right? My point.
I've heard that claim that. Because we have any services at all, that they're a magnet for homeless people from everywhere. It's just going to fuck here to eat a sandwich at the homeless services center or sleep on a mat on a church floor. You don't find that. You don't. One thing that was not in this report is the average homeless person is found within 40 miles of the last place they had housing. So people don't really travel long distances to go someplace they've never been before because they have good services there.
Was there anything in the report?
You find a regional thing, though, you know, like if you offer services, then usually the homeless in that region might come close, you know.
Well, what about the travelers? I mean, we noted that many, if not most, of the people who were part of the Visible Sleepers protest in front of the post office were travelers, some of whom have traveled on, traveling through younger people. This is, of course, a prime complaint. I was listening to KSCO a couple of days ago, and the talk show host was expounding on how these young people come to town. They get wonderful treatment and services, and this is one of those destination points because it's such a great place. And has there been a study done on what percentage of the people using the Homeless Lack of Services Center or the meals, whatever programs, are actually from traveling through? Because that's one of the main criticisms of the programs, I think, probably from Robinson, Comstock, Take Back Santa Cruz, and so forth.
Well, Santa Cruz is a real crossroads of people traveling through here of all walks of life. And we encourage it. I mean, the boardwalk gets 3.4 million visitors per year. And, you know, a lot of people come through. I guess that what the business world is, how can we attract only those people who have money to spend, and we don't attract people who don't have money to spend? And I don't know. That's quite a dilemma. To me, that's the wrong question. The wrong question is, what's this inequity that we have people that are so poor they can't even afford a roof over their head? Let's work on fixing that inequity. I mean, that's the way I look at it. But then, I'm not a member of Take Back Santa Cruz.
No, you're not. We're talking with Becky Johnson, who's been an activist for several decades. She was on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. She has written literally tens of thousands of words on the subject. And she's
a very fast typist.
And you're a fast typist? I wasn't aware of that.
A fast typist.
That's
perhaps
good.
Not as fast as you, Robert, dear, but pretty fast after all of those typing.
Well, I know you found some interesting police stats in that report.
Oh,
What you said that this is stuff you and others have been trying to get for a long time from the police department. And suddenly they appear in this report. What do these police, and obviously they don't really appear because the staff wants to support the HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom positions, but they're trying to support other positions. But talk about these stats.
Big lucky break just for us. Yeah. I have a report. I got my notes here in front of me. Should pull the report up itself because that's where those stats are. But one of them, Tina Scholl listed the most common crime types for homeless people to be arrested for. And she listed theft, public intoxication, probation violation, camping in city limits prohibited, panhandling, prohibited locations, manner, time, consumption of alcohol in public, and prohibited conduct on public property. Notice that none of those were for needles. None of those were for assault or rape. Or in fact, I don't think any of those would even appear on the FBI crime statistics, the ones that they collect. So one thing about that, Robert, is I'd note that intoxication and consumption of alcohol are legal on private property. So these are laws that are pretty much only enforced against homeless people who have no legal place to drink. This is not drunken necessarily, just having a drink or even having an open bottle is a crime if you're homeless. Panhandling is also a crime, if it is a crime, I'm not sure that it is. It's done by very poor homeless people. It's questionable if it's a crime because it may be protected free speech under the First Amendment. Now, conduct on public property, that's where the cops cite homeless people like sitting on the concrete lip of a tree well on Pacific Avenue, or for sitting on a park bench wrong, or standing on a water box, or for sitting on one of those drinking fountains downtown. That would be conduct on public property. And what we find here is that house people do these things all the time, but usually they're not cited. A probation violation could be as minor as jaywalking or smoking a cigarette on Pacific Avenue. So that's their own statistics about what this huge section of enforcement against homeless people by the police. And
Becky, let me ask you a question here, because this is really, I mean, it's interesting in telling the kinds of crimes you've itemized that have nothing to do with real crimes, like assault and, you know, rape and murder and even robbery or even drug war crimes, although you know, I suppose some of it is for drug war stuff, but I guess none of those specific items you mentioned were for illegal drugs, right?
Right. That was all. Well, they had two entries for alcohol.
Right.
One was for open container, which doesn't imply any drunkenness at all, necessarily.
Right, right. So I guess my question is, and you've suggested, and I tend to, you know, suspect you may well be right, that the majority of these citations are written for people who are houseless, traveling through homeless people in that sense, and not local people or people with money who are in town or people who have some kind of a lodging. And do we have any hard evidence of that? Is any of that evidence either show up in this report? Or I probably doesn't. I would imagine that would be kind of something that they wouldn't want to show. But have you gotten any stats from other sources around this? I think at one point I might have made a Public Records Act request to find out. I think it was specifically around sitting ban tickets on Pacific Avenue. You know, where, how many of them went to homeless people? How many of them went to non-homeless people? But do we have any stats on any of that you know of, or do you have any sense of that?
Yeah, that was in the report, and that's what we were so surprised to see. I'm going to have to pull that up on my computer here to read it off for you.
Just tell me what your recollection of it is. I trust that you've been working on this issue for the last few days, and you probably have a sense of it. What's your recollection?
Yeah, well, first off, you see a huge number of under these calls for service for the city of Santa Cruz versus other jurisdictions like Capitola, Scotts Valley, Watsonville, just off the chart, and with a very high rise also from the Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Office. Calls for service. They said that they had a record number of calls for service in 2012.
And this is actually something I really want you to talk about. But before you get into this, let me just return you to this one question. Is there anything in this report, or do you have any recollection of the comparison of homeless tickets with non-homeless tickets for this offense?
They did itemize that.
Oh, yeah, they did. Okay.
They went through and looked for item by item and looked to see if their address was 115 Coral Street or if their address was listed as either homeless or transient.
Okay.
And they found that of arrests made in the city of Santa Cruz, 42% are of homeless people.
But for those particular offenses, of that particular group of offenses that we see are primarily homeless crimes, did they clarify what percentage in that group are for homeless and what are for non-homeless?
They said that the ones I listed earlier...
Yeah.
That's what they said that they were citing them for.
Right, that's what they were citing them for, but we don't have any indication of, let's say, of the panhandling group, you know, is 90% of them for people who are homeless?
For citations versus arrests?
No, for either citations or arrests. If anything that happens up for that particular crime, are most of the citations for homeless people, or are they mixed? In other words, the real question here is, are these predominantly focused on homeless people? And that would indicate to me a good reason to support Tom Amiano's AB5, the bill that wants to, you know, end this kind of discriminatory treatment, which is not really focused on in this report that you're mentioning at the Homeless City Council study session, but which comes out of it. Although it sounds like that these comparisons aren't in that report. There's no indication
of... Yes, they are.
Oh, they are. Okay, go ahead.
That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Go ahead.
That they do, they list for Santa Cruz, Capitola, Scottsdale, and Watsonville. They list how many arrests and citations they made and what percentage of them were to homeless people.
In the
Santa
category.
Cruz... It was 42% of arrests are homeless people. 31% of the citations issued are to homeless people.
Again, the problem is they don't say for what, though, in terms of... Are they just talking about those crimes?
No, they're talking about all arrests and all citations.
Right, so the problem we have is we don't know for those categories that they are talking about are the main homeless categories, whether that is almost exclusively a homeless category or whether, you know, this is very important for people who would want to consider these laws. They might say, well, it's a good public safety law because it isn't discrimination against homeless people. I mean, we want to stop anybody from panhandling or sleeping under a bridge or, you know, and other people will get cited for that too. In fact, however, it's my suspicion that it is almost entirely homeless people that get cited for that group of crimes. Perhaps open container is different. Maybe that, you know, there's a group of people from out of town.
Well, it would be fairly easy to do a record request based on this report.
Okay.
They're saying that one, according to their report and the statistics that they gave, 1.7% of the population of Santa Cruz is homeless. And yet they get 42% of the arrests of homeless people, 32% of citations are issued to homeless people. Capitola, it's 13% of arrests are to homeless people. And Watsonville, the same, 13%. Scotts Valley, only 7% are homeless people. So we see a huge spike in the percentage, first the number of arrests and citations made across the board, very, very high in Santa Cruz compared to other jurisdictions. And then the percentage of those arrests and citations issued to homeless is also very, very high in Santa Cruz compared to other jurisdictions.
So are these
the only other jurisdiction that is similar is Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Office.
So while they clarify that homeless people per se are being arrested for these essentially nonviolent crimes or cited.
Exactly.
Even though they clarify that, they suggest then that of all the crimes, rape, murder, assault, home entry, that the 41% in Santa Cruz or whatever the figure you gave was, is for all crimes. And
yes,
that's
the 41
of
all arrests made in Santa Cruz in 2012.
Right. So therefore,
42% of the arrests were made of homeless people.
I get the feeling maybe you're missing my point, or maybe not. The point is that they're not giving you a sense of how the homeless are only being arrested for a particular category, and yet they're creating a much broader category. It's really kind of telling by saying, well, you know, there's a huge amount of money being spent on these stupid arrests. Which I think is your point, right?
Well, then they did some itemization of that, too. They showed the homeless budgets, which were dinky. You know, the city pays $244,000 a year out of its general fund for homeless services at the Homeless Services Center. Just like, you know, five different services there. And, they get additional money, but that's federal and state money or private nonprofit organizations and donations is what they run on. In the report, Tina Scholl said that they paid $350,000 for the first alarm security patrols that have only been going on for about a year. These special patrols around the library and City Hall and downtown. And they took that. That cost $350,000. So that's, you know, $125,000 more than the funding going for all homeless services at the Homeless Services Center. And now the police want to make that a new line item, and so they get their $22 million, but they don't have to take the $350,000 for the first arm. They want to add that to the additional at the next budget round. So when it comes, they also said that, according to Tina Scholl's figures, well, it's difficult to quantify how much it costs to cite or arrest these homeless people. She did come up with a number of $180 per citation. or interaction there. But then when they said, well, we were unable to find out anything about what happens after we send the ticket to court. So they had what those costs would be for court costs and jail and all that. They didn't have any number for that. And then another thing that I could not figure out was that they said that they added that up and they said, so it costs around $1.5 million to enforce all these arrests and citations against homeless people, right? But then they said that they're making, 42% of the arrests are against homeless people and 31% of the citations are against homeless people, but the budget's $22 million. Shouldn't it be more like $9 million rather than $1 million? Do you understand where I'm going, Robert?
It doesn't mean that the police budget does not simply include the cost of citations and arrests. It includes, public safety patrols. It includes pensions. It includes buildings. I mean, I suppose that might be their response. But
yeah,
let me ask you. Your commentary on this.
You said 85% of the $22 million budget is for salaries for police officers.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's a telling stat. I'm wondering, I actually ran across the huge amount of overtime they were paying Santa Cruz police officers at least a few years ago. Mm-hmm. There actually was a tabulation of police salaries, and many yearly outputs to police were over $100,000. For half the police force, certainly a significant number of the police officers, not just Chief Vogel and Deputy Chief Clark. But I appreciate you're going through this and you're pointing out some highlights here, but you also had some strong remarks to make about this, Becky, which I thought were to the point. And Tina Scholl droned us through this whole damn thing, and the report was 35 pages long or some such thing. And I it's not that I want to discourage you from getting out the relevant facts, but I would encourage you to point out your commentary on this as well, which I'm frankly more interested in, or as interested in, as the stats you're giving.
Well, I wanted to comment about the whole concept of a call for service, too. That people, when they hear, we had 104,000 calls for service to the police department in 2012, they think, that means people were getting on a telephone and calling in and asking for service. No. That's not what a call for service is. A call for service is just a convenient unit of measurement of police work. And it does include sometimes answering a phone call from a member of public who needs help. But it might be just that the police are going patrolling maybe a parking lot, and then they mark it in that, I went and patrolled that parking lot, and it's part of their regular patrol. But that gets marked down as one call for service. And it's just a way of measuring things. I think it's also a way of confusing the public about what police actually do. But anyway, these calls for service with the new predictive policing policy, what that does is the software that they're constantly adding new data and crunching it and trying to predict where crime will occur. So when they go on these patrols, they have all these places that the computer picked that says, you should go here, you should go here. So this has generated a whole bunch more calls for service that nobody ever called. There may be no crime going on, but the police go out there anyway, and they log it, and, of course, we pay for it.
Let me ask you, Becky.
Turns out that actually only about 32% of calls for service are actually someone calling and asking for service.
And that figure was in the report?
No. That figure was not in the report.
Where did you get that figure?
I got that figure from looking at the annual report from the 911, Santa Cruz 911 Emergency Call Center. And they have a very elaborate report that breaks out statistics for all the different jurisdictions.
Where can people go if they, for example, think, oh, this Becky Johnson, she's just a partisan of the homeless, you know, a beggar backer person. You know, where can they go to see that you are, in fact, quoting stats that someone else has created from the 9/11 Center itself?
Well, I do try to include hyperlinks when I write these days. So that if you read my article, you know, just click on the link and go look at the data yourself.
Where is the article?
I'm on Twitter a lot these days, Robert.
Becky, where is this particular article that people can go to get this link? I know you have a website, Becky Johnson, onewomantalking.blogspot.com.
I haven't. I'm a little bit behind and putting stuff on my blog. If people go there, they won't find anything very new.
Will they likely? Will you be posting this fairly soon, do you think?
I'm working on a piece where I'm going to compile some of the data that we got from the police that I was very happy of them to collect and report on, by the way. It sort of confirms a lot of things that we've suspected to be true for quite a while about selective enforcement against homeless people seems to be indicated by that. The data seems to indicate that. And when I put that out, I'll include the hyperlink to that report from the 911 call center.
Sounds good. I have to wrap this up fairly quickly. Can you summarize sort of in the next few minutes anything else you've seen in the report that you think we should know about, and that you actually have written about this? And there is, I think, your comments on these on the report can be found on the Huff blog now, I believe, or on the Huff website. So for people who want to read it in your report in more detail, your response to the report, they can go to HuffSantaCruz.org, or it's also posted in Santa Cruz Indy Media under the calendar event of the Tuesday council meeting. I announced it kind of in a sarcastic way, and then I posted your comments underneath it. So it's on both websites for people who want it. But go ahead. What would you conclude?
Yeah, go to the Huff website. That's always a good place to go, or a good place to start. Some of the things were that are very germane to this discussion that weren't in the report were documenting how many treatment centers are available for homeless people who are experiencing drug addiction or alcoholism, and they want to get treatment and help to get off of their addiction. That wasn't in the report, and the hard facts, and I just confirmed this recently with the director, Janice, that at any given time there are only two or three slots open for an indigent homeless person at any given time in Janice, and Janice is the only program available to homeless people in this area. That's not in the report. Another thing not in the report is nothing about the homeless deaths, or the fact that homeless people, when they do die, are dying about 22 years earlier than their life expectancy would say, their length of life. And they're not dying of anything different than people in houses die of. They're dying of the exact same causes, heart attacks and strokes and diabetes and cancer and those sorts of illnesses. If there's anything that's higher for homeless people in
terms of death is probably suicide. There's a very high rate of suicide among homeless people. So those things are not in the report. So I guess, they didn't want to study those aspects. They don't want to study the effect of their programs on the homeless people themselves. It was, how do we get rid of homeless people? Either get them into houses or get them out of town. The latter than the former.
You were a part of the whole study that happened mainly as a sort of a fight back against activism that wanted to change the sleeping ban and other anti-homeless laws about 13 years ago when, 15 years ago when the new city council came in. 1998, actually, is what I'm thinking of, when the new city council came in and there was a task force to examine the camping ordinance, followed the next year by the homeless issues task force. How would you contrast the reports of those two groups, which were much more extensive than this? I mean, the task force to examine the camping ordinance took 3 months. The homeless issues task force took 9 months. They came up with long reports that can still be found, at least the homeless issues task force, online. At the Huff website, actually. But you were, very closely connected, spent a lot of time with those groups. How would you compare their reports with this report?
Well, they came up with 28 findings. And the Homeless Issues Task Force was trying to find solutions to help homeless people, to help them to get back into housing, to help them get better medical care, to help them have less bad outcomes, really. If they're still homeless, then at least help them to be able to have showers and places they could wash their clothes, that sort of thing. So that was the bent of the Homeless Issues Task Force. This report by Tina Scholl, and it seemed like they were scraping the barrel to find any possible negative effect that could be quantified of homelessness on the rest of the community, how it affects businesses, how it affects the police budget, how it affects the fire department, how it affects water quality in the city. I mean, they really were making a case that people peeing and pooping in the creek are affecting the water, the coliform count in our waterways, which I find absurd, frankly. Not saying that someone doesn't poop and it doesn't get in the water. I'm not saying that. That certainly obviously does happen. But you have to look at numbers. Is it a significant amount of pollution or not? And I've been watching the coliform count for years and years and years in the city of Santa Cruz, largely from the San Lorenzo River. And most years, it's very, very rare to get a high coliform count at the Highway 1 bridge. But by the time you get to the river mouth, the coliform count is way up. By far, the biggest polluter to the San Lorenzo River and hence dumping into the bay is the city of Santa Cruz. The businesses, the homes, the cars, that's what's polluting the river. And historically, the biggest polluter was the salt cannery, which for 125 years polluted the river immensely. I didn't find any of that part valid. Other than it underscores the need for bathrooms. That was another thing that really wasn't mentioned. They didn't talk about where public bathrooms are, or how accessible they are, or what hours of operation they are. Do we Do we even have a 24-hour bathroom in the city of Santa Cruz? Possibly at the Homeless Services Center, but other than that, I'm not talking about a private bathroom like a 24-hour restaurant or something like that, but, you know, a public bathroom. I don't know of one that's open. So I think they close a lot of them at sundown, and that leaves a lot of time where people need to use a restroom, and one may not be available. That wasn't in the report.
If anyone has any questions for Becky Johnson or comments, you can call in on the other line while she's still online here, I mean on the phone, 469-3119. 469-3119, but call quickly. We only got about 5 or 10 minutes left in the show, at which point Uncle Dennis will come barreling into the studio and growl me away from the mic. So
he better not have an open container.
Well, usually it's closed, but then it gets open very quickly. That's another story.
But he's indoors. I guess it's okay.
I know, Becky, you've also been
out in the world.
You've also been involved in the HUF meetings, and you've actually kind of fashioned a few resolutions around some of these issues. You want to talk about any of those before you go?
Oh, sure. We passed 2 resolutions at the last HUF meeting. The first one was HUF has asked that Officer SCPD Officer Alvarez in Alvarez.
Vasquez. Vasquez,
V-A-S-Q-U-E-Z. Vasquez.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, I got the names wrong, sorry. I'm not reading it here. Vasquez was that we asked that he be suspended from the police force pending a full investigation of the incident that took place on April 22nd on Pacific Avenue, where he injured the man who was in handcuffs. And I did want to comment on that. If you watch the video, the man is in handcuffs. He is all, you know, I mean, he's I would say he was resisting arrest, but not in a way that endangered the officer. In fact, he had waved off another officer who offered to help him and felt that he was not in danger, and he didn't look like he was in danger either. But he reaches up behind the man's neck and then very forcefully forces the man's head into the pavement, and you hear a loud crack as the man's face hits the pavement. It's really shocking. It was uncalled for. He did not need to do that. He did not drop him. It was not accidental. It was clearly intentional on his part. And you could argue that he needed to get more forceful because the man was very, very drunk and not very cooperative and wasn't getting into the police car in a very rapid manner. But to do that to a person who's already in handcuffs, he needs to be pulled off the force before another person is injured in that way. The second resolution that we passed was about urination and defecation citations that are issued in the city of Santa Cruz, and we simply said that HUF calls for all citations issued for urination and defecation in the city of Santa Cruz during hours in which no public restroom is available to be dismissed.
Wouldn't this make out-of-town drunks who are wandering back to their Cadillacs and then take a piss on the side of the building immune from such citations?
Clearly it would.
Well, maybe there should be an income requirement that if you are below a certain income and you can't afford to go into a bar, you don't get a ticket. Whereas if you're one of these rowdy drunks who comes into town and causes problems and then too lazy to go back into the bathroom and use it, you do get a citation. What do you think, Doctor?
Well, Robert, the city just spent $4.1 million to put up an arena for a for-profit basketball team. There's a nice set of restrooms they put up for that building. They need to open them up 24 hours a day so that there is a restroom available at any time.
So will you
what do they expect a person to hold their water from sundown until the next day?
That's good discipline, Becky. These homeless people need to learn self-control.
It tells them that they shouldn't eat food or drink water because of the inevitable results of that. You know, it's humiliating to treat.
Will you be standing
to homeless people who are peeing and pooping in the bushes
when
there's no bathroom?
Will you be standing in front of the stadium with signs demanding that the bathrooms be opened?
Oh, well, that's a thought. We've been trying to figure out what kind of sign we could stand in front of the stadium and hold so that I think we're getting closer to that goal.
Well, you know, what you might do is what Wanton Dave Jacobs and Robert Flory did in 1994. They, again, around the issue of public bathrooms, because that was just then as now, there were no public bathrooms at night. They set up a situation where they held up blankets and they had a chamber pot on the sidewalk on Pacific Avenue. And anybody who wanted to take a dump, they would provide them with a moment of privacy and a place to dispose of their waste. They, of course, were arrested for doing so.
Oh, what was the charge? Urination defecation?
No, it wasn't that. It was, I think they arrested them before there was any urinating and defecating. They arrested them for an obscure section of the sleeping ban that was passed along with the downtown ordinances in 1994, which prohibits either the sleeping ban or another downtown obstructions on the sidewalk after dark.
Ah, you hold the obstructing the sidewalk after dark, where the same thing mysteriously doesn't obstruct the sidewalk during daylight hours. But
as soon as the
rays of sunlight disappear, suddenly it becomes obstructive.
Well, we're trying to make Santa Cruz a more family-friendly environment, Becky, and having these dangerous items on the sidewalk like homemade porta-potties simply doesn't do the trick. And particularly at 1 or 2 in the morning when families are known to, may not be as frequent downtown, but we want them to be able to come down any time of the day or night. Well, I see.
Yeah.
I've left you speechless.
I know what's stopping them now.
And I'm afraid that we have only 2 minutes left, so I'm going to give you 30 seconds to sum up.
Okay, well, follow me on Twitter, BeckyJohnson222. And if you go back at my last tweets, I have all the links to what we've been talking about.
Thank you, Becky, and I appreciate you taking the time to both do this massive study that you did. And people want it, they can go onto the Huff website, the Huff blog, and they can also sign on to the Huff email list, and you can actually get Becky, you occasionally put stuff up there yourself.
Thank you, Robert, for putting on such a fine radio show.
Well, I was tempted to cut you off, but unfortunately I got a cramp in my finger. You know how it is.
I escaped the mute button once.
But Uncle Dennis is saving me the trouble because he's just arrived, and in his usual manner, he's interrupting me in the middle of my important consummation here. And he's attempting to turn up his own microphone, but I'll give him his word. As soon as it comes 8 o'clock, you have 45 seconds left in my show, Uncle Dennis.
Hey, right. Play some Strawberry Alarm Clock.
All right, there you go. There's a request for you, Dennis.
Sure, I'll play Strawberry Alarm Clock.
So I
just wanted to remind Robert that years ago, the Ford Motor Company, in an effort to figure out the cause of accidents in their pickup trucks, installed a small recording device The result of that 5-year-long study was in 80% of the cases, what they recorded was, here, hold my beer, hang on, and watch this.
It sounds like an apocryphal story, to say the least. Any case, thank you for hanging with me for this edition of Bathrooms, Fields,
and
Broadsides.
You'll hang separately.
That's true, according to Ben Franklin, anyway. So I will be returning to this neck of the woods probably on Sunday.
You can vote against that if you like.
And that'll be at
Your radio off.
9:30 in the morning, assuming I get up and want to do that. Uncle Dennis will be with you for the next 3 hours.
You mean you're not going to throw Thomas out of the studio?
Thomas never comes to the studio. I don't need to
throw
him out.
Why does Thomas pay his dues if he doesn't do his show?
He's a loyal Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcaster, I think.
Yeah, but one who doesn't broadcast. We want Thomas's input.
Well, you're going to have to drive to his place and give him a ride. Show a little pizzazz, Uncle Dennis.
He rides to the Bay Area every day. What's his problem?
Well, maybe he's tired of driving. Have you ever thought of that? Anyway, Uncle Dennis will be with you to discuss these and other arcane issues for the next 3 hours and also play ancient music. The 60s are over, Uncle Dennis.
Nostalgia, Robert.
No
nostalgia.
One has told you. Anyway, so...
Well, the other one I like is, he died, get over it.
Yes, that's true. You know, that's what they said, like Obama said, the Constitution is it's a fine document unless you live in Boston, of course. All right, so thank you for being with me, and give me a call off air if you have some video you want to post. Posting video like the Vasquez video is very, very important. Do that, please, and then let us know that you've done it.
But you didn't do that.
No, Brent Adams did that, and a tip of the hat to Brent. And that's what we would like to see more of. In fact, Brent called you, post the video that you were given by Sonny and Natasha. We want that posted as well. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Next up, the evil Uncle Dennis will be with us, or with you. I'm getting out of the studio, but he is staying.
Hamas, as you know, is sponsored by Iran, but it doesn't stop there. Iran is actually a front for Chavez, and Chavez does anything that Fidel tells him, and of course, as we know, Fidel gets his orders from Hezbollah. So it's a very difficult situation, and as we know, Hezbollah takes their orders from Mr. Zelaya, who recently, in a reckless move, returned to Honduras. Folks, we can't all just return to a country just because we're the president. I mean, when I say we, of course, I mean Aristide. But what happened there in Honduras, as you know, was not a coup. It was, it was a coup, but not a military coup. Okay, it was a military coup, but with pajamas.
Hey, Grandpa. You've had a good life. Yes. Panels in the sky. They tried to kill me with their
public guns.
They're gonna kill me if you cars don't get there first. They wanna kill all our babies and the old people too. Take away my choice of doctor like the current system do. Big government will tell me what I can and cannot do. I prefer to have free enterprise control my life. Thank you. How do I know this? Did I really check? I'll tell you quick. I'm in a rush. It comes straight from Glen Beck. You may say it's all exaggerated or made up by the bourgeoisie. Just because it's been repudiated by those commies at the AARP. 'Cause I'm a Tea Party American, a true patriot, trying to save business and guns from socialistic rot. It's in the Constitution that immigrants must leave, and if your healthcare bankrupts you, I ain't gonna grieve. 'Cause I got mine, Jack. You lazy bums, get packed. I won't let tax time to help some kid who isn't mine. I'm going to a Tea Party. I'm going to a Tea Party. I'm going to a Tea Party. I'm going to say to hell, karma. Party down with Big Pharma. Yeah, 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 yeah. Those Nazis in the White House are preparing for the crimes. I read all about it in the Washington Times. Obama's just like Hitler, draw a mustache, you'll see. He wants to give the lazy poor my flat panel TV. Okay, he's not entering Jews unless they're very old. But he's still a Muslim, he hates Jews, so I'm told. And I can tell because my eye for detail does not fail to win. One time he went to Egypt and not to Israel. That's it! Oh yeah. We need the GOP back with their real Americans. They never did anything to hurt anyone of their class. Mark my words, this gang of White House Reds put our country in a red. Oh wait, somebody beat them to it. Oi, our ass is crashed.
I got mine, Jack. You lazy bums, get back.
I won't let the tax pass. Help some kid who is mine. I'm gonna tea party. I'm gonna tea party. I'm gonna tea party. We'll all be in that place. Yeah, my good old boys from J.P. Morgan Chase. Okay, it's true that all of this is, well, false. But an administration that supports abortion naturally will eventually support death panels. And if they support a public option, they'll inevitably abolish free enterprise. And if they disagree with me, they will undoubtedly put me in jail. Where I will continue to fight against big government with one difference. I'll have health care. Cause I got mine, Jack.
And that concludes the latest musical offering. Is this yours too?
No.
No. Anyway, Robert will be back. That's the unfortunate thing. But if you are interested in listening to more of his radio, in quotes, Sunday at 9:30 in the morning will be the place you want to do that.
Can you hear the people singing the song of angry men?
Yeah, if you want to be miserable, tune in on Sunday for more of Les Miserables.
The people who will not be slaves again.
Goodbye, Robert. And here... I've got myself stuck in the studio, so anyway, welcome to From the Cream to the Dregs. I'm Uncle Dennis, be here till 11 o'clock tonight, and bringing you rock and roll, blues, and psychedelic music from the 60s, 70s, and beyond. Stay tuned, we have the Brew of the Week coming up in 20 minutes or so, then at 9 o'clock, the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use, and then 10 o'clock, we've got the Ultimate Vinyl Hour, where we play a selection of real 12-inch vinyl from our vast record library. Girls, I've had me a few.
Some are small and some are cute. I tasted the honey and dew. Lord, I will be with you. I was born in the country, street in the town. Now going where to see what's going down. I see cowards and heroes as fast as the wind. I go down in a road there is to see what's around the bend.
Pretty baby.